Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, and when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
This podcast is part of the How We Are Network. For information on this episode and many other like-minded shows, visit howweare.org. That's howweare.org.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins, and something's different, right? Huh, maybe some of those of you that have been listening to the show were getting a little tired of that theme music. But no, I changed it up, because I figured it's episode 100, let's just do something. I've asked for some suggestions. I got, it was 20 or 30 songs people kind of sent my way and suggested stuff and whatever, and I landed on Refused, Rather Be Dead. The song's great. It gets you in the right state of mind to just be pumped. Like, yeah, man, this is exciting. I can't wait to listen to this interview with this person. So yeah, I changed the music. So shout out to Balance and Composure. Thank you for letting me use your song. And Refused. Here we are. This is what it'll be for the foreseeable future. Anyways, the guest this week is Jordan Dreyer from La Dispute. He is the vocalist for the much beloved band. I personally love them. They just came out with a new record called Rooms of the House, and whew, it's a doozy, man. It is a really good record. Definitely just progressing on everything they have done, and just, it's really, really good, but you should check it out. Anyways, let's get some business out of the way. I'm going to make a big deal out of episode 104. Just pay attention to that. It will be an awesome guest, and I'm announcing something pretty cool I'm very excited about, so we'll lead up to that. It's a lot of teasing over the next few weeks. Anyways, propertiesact.com, visit them. They got some fun stuff, as always, on the site. Become educated. 100wordspodcast.com, go on iTunes, review the show, drop some stars, write some sentences about it. I still check that very regularly, and I love to see that sort of feedback. Makes the show look cooler to advertisers and everything else in between. And email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com, if you would like to talk, because I like to talk, obviously. That's why I'm doing a podcast. Anyways, some other stuff. College basketball, March Madness, that's happening right now. I love this time of the year. It's so much fun for me. I care about two sports, basketball and golf. Sorry for those of you that like football, hockey, baseball. I don't dislike those sports, and they are fun to watch in a live environment. But basketball and golf, that's what I follow. And so this time of the year is amazing because it's got college basketball followed up by the Masters, which is golf for those of you that don't pay attention at all, which is most of America. Then it's followed up by the NBA playoffs. Oh, it's so much fun. So it's like I get to enjoy about, 2.5 months of just like awesome tension in regards to sports. And then the rest of the year, I'm kind of like, whatever. Anyways, I've been noticing, and this is something that is not new within the independent music scene and culture, so to speak. But the sentiment that is shared when, bands get up on stage and they play and they say, fuck security, they're the worst people ever, whatever. Some sentiment in regards to security is the worst thing of all time. Now, this is going to sound like a very parent-like rant, But I personally have always adhered to this philosophy, even since I was like, 17, 18 years old. Now, to be fair, I'm going to put a caveat on this. I completely agree with the alpha male tendencies of some security guards that are located in clubs. Because, sometimes it's just a matter of, like, it's a job to them. And so when they see someone, quote unquote, acting out, they're going to do their thing and whatever. It's awful when those boundaries get crossed and they just feel like they need to, take out their frustrations on a poor kid that's stage diving or crowd surfing or whatever. Clearly there's a line that is drawn, and I am not speaking to that line. I am speaking to the overall sentiment that, just to me, it's an ignorant statement, like fuck security. When realistically a band is playing at a venue, like I'm not talking about a VFW hall, I'm not talking about a basement show, clearly security is not needed for that. Or clearly most small all ages venues around the country don't have security as far as like stopping kids stage diving and stuff like that. But there's that mentality of just like you immediately rally against that, when in actuality, that is the reason that the club or the venue is in business, is because they have security. It's mandated. It's not something that people are like, oh, wow, that's great, we need to have 40 security guards here. Like, I'm speaking from personal experience. In the few years that I booked the Sound and Fury Music Festival up in Santa Barbara, we always had to have security. We not only did we have uniform security, but we had police officers. We had unmarked security officers, like people who were policing the grounds for us. And it's one of those things where that is literally the most expensive thing it took from us for the festival to put on. It's so much money. And that mentality of just like, oh, fuck those guys. Like they're trying to, stop our fun. That usually isn't the case. And I hate that sort of knee jerk reaction where it's like, oh, I see security guard, I don't trust them. I do understand the security guards that cross over the line and people get a negative impression based off those experiences. I totally get that. I understand and I agree. I think it's a blanket statement. And blanket statements are just so frustrating to me because there's so many nuances around it. And so when bands go on stage and they're like, fuck security, kill them or something like that, it's a bummer. It's a big bummer. And I understand it provokes an immediate reaction. The crowd's like, yeah, this is great and whatever. And if your goal is to provoke that reaction, then so be it. That's your art. I'm not going to step in the way of that. But when it gets in the way of people actually respecting those who are actually just doing a job, they're just there, they're hired. It's like, they don't care if you're, doing something stupid on stage, if you're, spitting, or they don't care. Most of the time, the good security guards are, I'll put it that way. So anyways, it's just something I've noticed recently, and not even so much like by specific events, but just, videos I've seen of bands playing on festivals or whatever, not even talking about like South by Southwest or anything big like that, just smaller festivals. And I'm just like, oh, that's your immediate reaction? Like, fuck security, like break down the barriers. It's like, okay, whatever. And I realize I may be viewing a video out of context because there may have been certain incidents that day. Anyways, I'm going on and on. I apologize. But it bothers me. And if you feel bothered by that as well, talk to me. So Jordan from La Dispute, I mean, it was a few weeks before they released their new record, like I said, Rooms of the House. I've only spoken to him a few times in person. And it was one of those things where we just settled in immediately to a very, very comfortable place where he expressed himself in ways that I honestly wasn't anticipating. I was expecting him not to be cagey, but just to be protective in some capacities. Because, he himself is a private man as far as social networking is concerned. He doesn't put himself out there. I mean, the band in general doesn't put themselves out there. And so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how much he would want to reveal or talk about or anything like that. But let me tell you, he expressed a lot and it was awesome. It was a very genuine conversation, and I was really glad that he decided to do all this stuff with me because it makes the 100th episode very special. So here we go. Here's my interview with Jordan, and I will talk to you after the show. Are you in a wind tunnel? You're a little windy.
I'm outdoors in the state of Michigan in the middle of early February, so I'm sort of in a wind tunnel. I'll try to avoid it. I'll try to burrow myself up against this giant snowbank in the parking lot.
It's okay. I was just curious.
So hearing you guys' first full length, like not Vancouver, because I'm sure that's, you guys don't even refer that as a release, probably.
No, I mean, it's a thing. It's a snapshot of an earlier time.
Right. Yeah,
typically we say somewhere is the first LP, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I remember hearing it. It was introduced to me via a friend of mine, and he was like, oh, you know, this band I saw, because I think it was one of the first times you guys came to California. I didn't see you guys, but my friend did. And I listened to it, and my immediate sort of old guy jaded reaction was like, oh, this is a band that's kind of trying to rip off Me Without You. Oh, I see what they're going for. But then I progressed to be like, oh no, there's more nuance to this. There's layers to it. And any band that immediately doesn't try to sound like what's happening currently in the musical landscape is always interesting.
Sure.
But then as I got to know the band more and more, I was like, okay, this is a force to be reckoned with. But did you guys feel those trappings when you first started to get out there of people being like, oh, like immediately writing you off just because of, either like any preconceived notions or from that capacity? Or did you guys just like, well, yeah, we're just kind of trying to prove ourselves?
Early on there was a fair bit of that. As much as we try to not take that into consideration too much. But I think it's fairly impossible to avoid given the vocal approach,
right.
Which was never intentional on my part. It was more so an accident. I have no recognizable musical talent, at least in regards to playing an instrument or actually carrying a tune. So when we first started writing music, it was what happened when I walked and spoke into a microphone for the first time in my life, really. I think just having that kind of like spoken word vocal approach draws immediate comparisons to other acts,
right.
Whereas like a guitar style probably doesn't as much immediately draw you to comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that we've ever, we've never tried to sound like anything. And it was most frustrating for me early on because I felt very dismissive and unfair, in particular to my bandmates, because I don't think musically we sound like any of the acts that we generally get compared to. It's just more of a vocal comparison. So
yeah,
definitely there. And there's always, there's always preconceived perceptions that people carry about anything and everything, particularly when it's so easy to form and publicize an opinion or the internet. So that's pretty easy to ignore if you're passionate about what you do and you care deeply about it. So it was there, and I think it's still probably there, but I think we all just are focused on what we do because we love to do it.
Yeah. Just keep your head down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you yourself, were you born and raised in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, or where did you come up?
I'm born and raised here, yeah. So this is home sweet home, and has been since the day I came out of my dear mother's womb.
Wow, that's so I presume that your the profession that your family has was rooted to the location, or was it just like, no, we like where we're at?
I think it's mostly just, well, we have, my parents own a small business with, actually our drummer Brad is my cousin, so his mom and dad and my mom and dad own a local hardware store, and our grandparents owned it before, so we've always kind of been in West Michigan. We're both very Dutch, and Grand Rapids is a Dutch stronghold, so
right.
We're just kind of always been here, and happy to still be here. I love it.
It's funny because that the way that you're describing that, it sounds like such a relic from the past of like we own a family small business. And, obviously everybody immediately assumes that, it's like, either, doing something online or something from that perspective. But,
right.
Passing it down from sort of generation to generation sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. It's I've been very privileged, I think, to grow up where I've grown up and the family that I have, and even being part of a local small business is, I think had a pretty profound impact on my worldview. And it makes, I feel like when I'm talking about, like I'm from the Midwest and I'm talking to somebody on the coast, it makes me sound like I live in Lake Wobegon, but yeah. it's not so much the small, slow Midwestern life, but it's definitely not living in a massive metropolitan area. So I get the whipping snow and the wind tunnel.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that's it. Yeah. The way that I always used to describe it, and I don't, I don't mean this as a derogative statement, but just like, it's very charming. Cause like my stepfather, he was raised in a small town called Farmington, Illinois, which is like, I don't know about, it's about an hour south of Peoria. And so I visited there a lot, and having that experience of like living in Southern California and then going to visit a small town and spending, you know, weeks at a time out there, I loved it because it gave me that whole experience of being like, not looking at this being like, oh, this, look at these, you know, backwoods people who live with like, you know, 4,000 other people in this small ass town. How boring. It's like, no, it was fun. It was just different.
Yeah, absolutely. The word that I always get thrown, I mean, charming is one, but quaint and the like, but no, it definitely, it's every region in the country has its own distinct characteristics in regards to not just, you know, the weather and the geography, but the people who live here. And yeah, it's definitely different. It's definitely at times, you know, like still a bit stifled and passive aggressive, but we live in like kind of a cool pocket where you get the best of both worlds, where there's kind of that like traditional value structure where it's not oppressive. People are very open-minded, and there's a massive, you know, artistic community here. So I love the Midwest. I love having grown up here. Obviously, I love being on a coast or being down south. I love experiencing the differences everywhere you go, but I definitely value the way in which I was raised and the people that I know here.
Yeah, it's home for you. It's perfect.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure.
So because of the hardware store connection, are you yourself handy in any capacity?
You know, I like to think that I'm probably more handy than I am. I know how to. I probably have like a fair amount of practical knowledge that a lot of people don't grow up with. But it's hard for me to not compare myself to my family, because I have two older brothers who are very talented carpenters, and a younger brother who went to luthier school for woodworking and to build guitars. And my dad is a jack of all trades. So growing up in a hardware store, I've picked up a fair amount of know-how when it comes to fixing things around the house and the like, but not nearly as much as my siblings, who are particularly adept. I like to think other strengths, although sometimes I wish that I could build a roof truss.
Right. Yeah, you're like, comparatively speaking, I'm worthless, but comparatively speaking to the rest of the world, I'm probably doing okay.
Right. Well, that's another thing that I'm very fortunate about, having grown up in the family that I did, and being a part of a building community, is that I have, you know, it's knowledge that I think it's an afterthought to a lot of people, and it's kind of glossed over, but it's an important thing to have people who know how to work with their hands and build things. I consistently want to get better at it, and it's something that I, in my downtime, now that we're not touring as much, have focused more on, because I think there is tremendous value in being able to craft something with your hands. You know, it's just like, just building a house is just like writing a song. It's a craft, and it's an art form, and it takes practice and just being able to have a finished end product that is artistic and functional is very gratifying. So I'm constantly trying to glean more from the company that I have and the family that I've grown up in.
So I presume both your mother and father like work at the hardware store, and basically that's where kind of all the resources are put in.
Yep. Yeah, my mom, actually it's an interesting hardware store too, because it's in a lower income neighborhood, that is predominantly minority, and there's really two sides of the store. There's three sides. There's general hardware, and then there's like the service department, like the shop in the back, which is where I like to spend most of my time when I'm working there. And then there's finished hardware, which is all decorative hardware for like all these, you know, $1 million homes that are built around. So it's a really interesting demographic where you get like the people who are, you know, 70 and still doing handyman repairs around the house to pay their rent. And then there's like the rich, stuffy old white women who come in to dropped, you know, $300,000 on cabinet hardware. So it's a really interesting demographic, and that's been the coolest part about growing up there for me, is being able to like see the diversity in every specific demographic, where you can't really draw a line anyway, where some of the coolest people are the people who've worked with their hands for 60 years and still have to struggle to make ends meet. And then there's people who are fabulously well-to-do, however polite and enriched people. So it's it's an interesting little microcosm of the world.
Yeah, it's a total cross section. That's interesting. It's very symbolic. Like you said, it's very, you know, it's a good cross reference, and it's very symbolic of obviously what you experience in the quote unquote real world as well.
Absolutely.
So you're the third of four children in the family.
I have an older brother who is from my dad's previous marriage, who I'd never call him a half brother,
okay.
Who is quite a bit older than me. And then I have an older sister who is married and has three lovely children. And then I have an older brother and a younger brother. So I'm third of four with the people that I grew up living with.
Sure.
But I'm fourth of five if you include my eldest brother, which I do.
Which you do, yeah. And so your parents are still together currently?
Yep, they are.
And so it's your dad's second marriage and it's your mom's first?
Correct, yep.
Nice, nice. Well, it sounds like a pretty awesome structure, considering, you know, obviously you're introducing like sibling, like, you know, a sibling that wasn't part of the original nucleus, and, you know, everybody seems mm-hmm. to obviously, so you had a pretty, pretty solid childhood as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great childhood. I've been very lucky. My parents are great, and I get along well with all my siblings. Obviously everyone has, you know, bumps in the road and everything, and everyone, you know, it takes a little while to figure out how to always function with
right.
family members, but
right.
but we're definitely, you know, the older we get, the better off I think we all are in the way we interact, in the way that we you know, place importance on each other and everyone having a role in everyone else's life. So it's a great dynamic.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always find when you hear stories like that, you know, to be, I mean, it's encouraging, where you're just like, that's how it's kind of supposed to be, you know? Like, of course, you know, there's a saying that obviously you don't choose your family, but, you know, at the end of the day, you are related to these people and you need to find those common bonds. And sometimes they come later in life, like you're talking about, and then you're just like, oh, these people are awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no, like, perfect formula at all. Everybody grows up differently and in different situations, and there's, you know, good and bad in each, but yeah, you're right. Definitely, like, growing up and understanding that these people are your family and finding, you know, it's easy to get caught up in little tiffs when it's blood related, but you get to a point where you realize that the important thing is that you love these people and that you value their place in your life.
Right. Yeah. Rather than like holding these, you know, 10 to 15 year grudges that will just, you know, eat both parties up.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ray.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights. Speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.
Totally, absolutely.
And so as you were, you know, your formative years started to happen, like junior high and high school, what kind of kid did you find yourself? Because obviously from this sort of what we were alluding to earlier in regards to, you know, preconceived notions, you strike me as obviously a very sensitive, artistic guy. Would that be the label that you would put yourself on as far as high school and stuff is concerned?
Yeah, definitely. It's hard to look back at like seventh grade me, but I've always been fairly malleable, and I've always got along with different people, and I think part of it's I've always had no like strong vested interest in only one thing, but I've always liked a lot of different things, so it's made it easy to get along with people. Whether that be like, you know, loving sports but then also loving punk rock or whatever else. So, but I've always been more of a creative type of always. And enjoyed writing and enjoyed music and art as a whole. So, and I've always been a little sensitive, I guess.
When did music start to play a part of your life? Like, did your parents grow up with anything and start to expose you, or was it older siblings?
Well, I mean, going as far back as I can, my dad's record collection, and my dad plays guitar and sings. So I grew up, you know, listening to him playing Neil Young and Bob Dylan, and I've, you know, always been the kid. I was always the kid who ravaged his record collection and made him really nervous about how I was treating his old vinyl.
That makes me nervous just hearing about it too, because my 2.5-year-old, I've taught him how to play. Yeah. I've taught him how to play records, but he can only do that when daddy's around.
Okay, yeah, exactly. No, that was definitely my dad. It was like a weird push-pull for him, where I think he really loved that I was getting into the music that he loved and like finding something in like Neil Young and Jackson Brown, but also he was constantly on edge about me, you know, dog-earing his kids and scratching them if I put them on incorrectly. So it was an interesting push-pull on my father's face when he'd come home and I was digging through all his records. But I think now he's pleased that I did so.
So then when did you start to develop your own tastes as far as that stuff's concerned?
I guess 13 or 14 is when I first, I think, got into the artists that had a profound personal impact on who I am and where I was headed. And that was a lot of from a good friend of mine at the time and his older brother. So he was the first kid that I knew that had CD burning capabilities. So he would ravage his older brother's CD collection for like Howler Music and Small Round Bike and then like Modest Mouse and stuff. So he'd burn me CDs and bring them to school and give them to me. And I remember a number of occasions where I listened and was like, I don't get this, man. And then on third or fourth listen, I was like, holy shit. And the Howler Music was a big one. Plains of Sacred Stars and bands like that. And that's when I like got into punk and the subculture and started to really immerse myself in that world.
I love all those touch points that you're talking about, because like obviously Small Bound Bike from your home state, and then, you know, Plays with Sacred for Stars, obviously a Midwest band, and like it's just cool that the stuff that you gravitated towards was the stuff that geographically made sense unintentionally, I'm sure.
No, absolutely. It was always something that you find common ground in, even if you don't understand it completely at the time. But like, I liked a lot of music that was about the cold and about drinking with friends. So it's definitely, all those bands have a definite Midwestern tinge to what they do. And Smaller Bike was a huge one for me.
Yeah.
And I think I did find more in
smaller on bike than I did perhaps other bands in a similar vein, because I could not only compare my own experiences to theirs, but I could, you know, I could say, oh, I'm from Michigan, you know, and people from Michigan are intensely proud of where they're from for one reason or another. Mostly, I think, because our state is shaped funny, but
right. It's the mitten.
But yeah, right? that's it's a mitten. It's a mitten. It's so many different things. It's fine. I don't think other than Texas, there's probably no state that has more like stupid t-shirt knockoffs. Like everywhere you go, you see like it's like a gun or like a hand holding a gun or like a bunny rabbit jumping over something. There's so many different things, and I feel like every 2 weeks there's somebody else printing Gildan t-shirts with like a state of Michigan being something else.
Kind of
ridiculous. America's High Five was the first one that I really remember. And it was a friend of ours who actually put out that Refugee Cooper. He owns a couple bars and a venue in town, and he's a really great guy. He started printing America's High Five shirts, and then they were everywhere, and they were also everywhere in my household because my oldest brother, it's one of his best friends, so that was how, it was his go-to birthday gift, was just get a t-shirt from Jeff with the state of Michigan on it and give it to his siblings, which is pretty funny. So I think everyone in my family has a Michigan America's High Five shirt, but I don't know that anyone's ever worn one.
That's so amazing, because it's funny, because you mentioning that, it didn't really occur to me, but yeah, that's totally true as far as like the whole state pride, because obviously you have people that have pride about, you know, certain cities or whatever, but it's like the state as a whole, and it's like, yeah, I think you're correct. You guys fall right behind Texas.
it's totally true, and I have a lot of friends that'll like go to Michigan on tour and then come back and be like, everyone has a tattoo, like everyone has a Michigan tattoo. Like, yeah, I know a ton of people, and it's partly, I really think it's partly because it's a tattooable state,
right?
And it's also because I think, you know, like Michigan has very famously fallen on hard times, and I think people take a lot of pride in the character of the state and the people's abilities to really pick themselves up. So it's not purely a novelty act. But,
right.
It definitely comes into play.
Yeah, I know that's interesting. You played sports, and like, did you, what sports did you gravitate towards, like in high school? Did you actually play on teams and stuff like that?
I played soccer for a long, long time into high school. Mm-hmm. When I kind of decided that I was more interested in the arts and opted for theater and whatever extracurricular activity I could take part in. But
sure.
I've loved sports since I was a very little boy. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, hockey takes up the bulk of my thought process, which my bandmates tease me about a lot, and my girlfriend. So everyone has to listen to me talk about ice hockey, which is, I guess, kind of silly because it's a children's game. And it's probably something also that comes into being from a border state.
Of course.
A cold state.
Right.
Yeah. So like, I definitely, you know, you grow up skating in your backyard in the winter, and your friends play hockey and pond hockey. And it's the punk of professional athletics.
Right.
I think in a lot of ways, because it's the underdog and not a lot of people in the States actually pay attention as compared to, you know, the other three major sports. So there's definitely like the, oh, you like football? Well, I'm a hockey fan kind of thing that goes into it.
No, that's totally true. But yeah, no, I see everything you're talking about where it's like, well, it's the environment I was surrounded by, and I totally identified with that. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
And so did you, when you're doing, so you did theater, like you're actually, you know, participating in like plays, or was it musicals, or did you find yourself wanting to do one more than the other?
I did more plays than I did musicals in high school. I actually didn't do a musical until I was a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a terribly confident singer, which is kind of funny to look back on.
Yeah.
given how I've occupied my time for the better part of the last decade,
right,
and sort of singing in front of a group of people. But I started doing theater when I got to high school. I think just because I was falling in love with the arts, and I wanted to immerse myself in whatever way that I could. And that was probably the thing that I loved the most about high school, was performing and being in that weirdo community,
yeah,
the theater community. But I did plays and I did musicals, and there's a competitive public speaking called Forensics that's half dramatic and half public address, and I did that all 4 years of high school. So I competed. I told children's stories for competition for 4 years in high school, which was great. So,
interesting. So that was I'm not familiar. So that obviously it's not the debate team, but it's, you have a narrative and you are supposed to get it across as creatively as possible.
Yeah, it's, well, it's the blanket competition. It's forensics, not like CSI forensics, obviously.
Right, right.
But there's,
right.
there's two like overarching categories. There's public address events, and then there's traumatic interpretation events. And then there's subcategories. Like in public address, some of them are rehearsed speeches, memorized speeches, and some of them are extemporaneous and impromptu speaking, where you're like given a debate topic and then you have 5 minutes to present an improvised 3-part essay, essentially, on a topic. So that's super intense. But I did dramatic interpretation. So there's like poetry where you recite a poem or a collection of poems dramatically within a time frame with certain rules and regulations. I did all 4 years. I did storytelling, which alternates every year between like folktales and legends and children's stories. And it's memorized and it's 5 to 8 minutes. And the emphasis on characterization and creating distinct physical and vocal characteristics for people in the story. So it's a lot. It's super goofy, and but also super, super, super competitive. So it's funny, like if you were an outsider to watch one of these competitions and be like, "Ah, this is goofy," and you're telling a kid's story.
Right.
But it gets really, really cutthroat. It's like anything, and it's like football. There's a lot of schools in the state of Michigan that take forensics very seriously. It's the cool thing to do rather than like be a cheerleader, be a football player.
Right.
It got real. It wasn't just all fun and games. It was super intense. Although I was never very prepared like other people, because I never am prepared for anything,
right,
as evidenced by me missing your interview earlier.
Yeah. No, it's funny because anytime you introduce a competition into anything, like I mean, my mom was a high school English teacher, and she did this thing called Kiwanis Bowl, which is basically just like trivia. It's like, you know, one team versus another team. And I remember going to a few events with her and being like, you know, at the time I was like maybe 9 or 10, and being like, dude, this shit is real. Like people are pissed and they're ready to go at each other. And it was and you were just like, this is trivia, right? Like we're just talking about trivia. But it's like, no, it's, you introduce that. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. If it's competitive and there's a sense of pride about it, it's going to be it's going to be cutthroat.
Oh, absolutely. So true.
But what was your favorite play that you did in high school or even junior high?
My senior year, we did for our fall musical, we did Peter Pan.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Like every role that I ever had was the wacky bit character who spoke in a funny voice and had a fake mustache or a fat suit. So, my best friend who was a phenomenally talented actor was Captain Hook, and I was Smee, he was our handman. So yeah. I got to have none of the pressure and all of the jokes. So it was a lot of fun. We also did some serious plays that were a lot of fun. We did Flowers for Algernon, and then it was a pretty interesting experience. And we did a Neil Simon play called Fools that's pretty hysterical. So that was a lot of fun. And another instance in which I got to be the onstage goofball and then get reprimanded by our director for milking jokes for too
long. Yeah, be like, hey, the focal point isn't you. We
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's one of those things where you're performing, you know, 4 nights in a row, and if you get a rise out of people the first night with a certain joke, your first reaction, especially when you're like 17, is like, oh man, they laughed when I did it that hard. Wait till I do it tomorrow night.
Yeah. You're like, dude, I can't wait.
It doesn't always work that way.
I could just see you going home and just be like, dude, this is gonna kill tomorrow night. This is what I'm gonna do.
There was one time, and I still like a couple of my friends that I'm still really close with give me shit about it. But there's one in that, you know, Simon play Fools. I was the villain, and I was like this Russian guy, and I was trying to court this young lady, and I like threw a rock to wake her up, and somebody like cues the shattered glass sound effect, and then I turn and act like make a big oops face to the crowd. And the first night we did it, everyone laughed so hard. And then the next night we did it, or the next week we did it. This is for competition also. I did the same reaction and nobody laughed. But I was so determined to get that laugh that I just held that pose for like a good 4 seconds, which is an eternity when you're performing a 45-minute one-act play.
Right.
And no, not a single person laughed. It was funny one night, and then it was just a complete disaster. And whenever that play comes up, that's like the first story. Like, remember when you stared at the crowd for 5 seconds like a complete dumbass and nobody laughed? Like, yeah, thanks, I do.
Yeah, you're like, yep, of course. That's forever implanted.
Yeah, and I still get to have that like almost every night on tour when I make a really bad joke.
Right. Yeah,
so I still get to fall flat on my face in front of a crowd of people.
Right, it's perfect. It's perfect. Be like, oh, this is gonna kill. Nope. No one has any idea what I'm talking about, or I mumbled that. Whoops.
Yeah, exactly. And it's worse now because when I make that joke and nobody laughs, then everyone just gets to look at my four bandmates all shake their head while they tune their guitars or whatever.
Yeah, they're like, oh man, we should leave. Pretty much zero space for Jordan to speak in between songs.
Exactly. That's the conversation we have before every tour. Like, how can we eliminate all the speaking parts? Eliminate all unnecessary Jordan banding. I'm all for it. Yeah, because I just feel like I have to fill the space.
Yes.
And that's when things get ugly.
I empathize with you completely because that was I sang in all the bands that I played in. Yeah. And I filled the same exact role. And it basically got towards the end of us playing together where they would just literally start a song in the middle of a sentence and it was like I just had to laugh because I was like, okay, I get it, but then at the same time I was like, hey, that's kind of rude too.
Well, I've had the same experience. There's always that first, like, right when it happens, I'm like, really? And then afterwards, I'm like, okay, I get it.
Totally. You're like, I can't.
If I had a guitar and I was talking, I would do the same thing to myself.
Right. I can't have my feelings hurt. you alluded to this earlier, but the idea that you obviously didn't have these sort of like, musical, I want to play in band aspirations. Like, so did you have the desire, but you're just like, well, literally I can't play anything. So what am I going to do?
I think I always wanted to, from the time that I like fell in love with, this subculture and like saw what music could mean to me, I think I wanted that to a degree, but I never thought it was an attainable goal because I didn't have the ability to do it myself.
Right.
I never had the drive or ambition to learn how to play an instrument. So I guess I was always kind of waiting for that opportunity to fall in my lap or hoping it would. And then somehow I did. And almost 10 years later, and I'm talking to you, it's crazy. It's never something I expected, and it's, like I said, it wasn't something I thought was attainable. It was always kind of in the back of my head as an interest and what I thought was a pipe dream, and then you meet the right people, and things just kind of start to fall that way, and then all of a sudden all this time has elapsed, and I've been to X number of countries and played for however many people and met all these bands that I idolized growing up, and it's pretty nuts if I like actually stop and think about it.
Right. So I guess the best way to describe it is like the desire was there, but you clearly had no resources to put that together.
Right. Exactly.
But for all intent and purposes, La Dispute is your first actual band. Like, you never played a show. Yeah. That's stupid, dude. That makes me mad. you gotta have a fucking shitty band, but
I had like I played one show with some friends and, like, years and years ago, when I was like 15, and that somehow spiraled into this because we played with, it was like the only show I ever played, and it was a joke band. Mm-hmm. And we played with my cousin's band, and they, I don't know, like, after that, it was just kind of like, he was like, yeah, we should come, like, cover and have the driving song or whatever, and then we did that, and decided we'd try writing a song, and then, again, fast forward almost 10 years, it's like, holy shit, how did that happen?
right. Totally. I mean, as all good things, in my opinion, it's a matter of timing and total happenstance, where it's just like, oh, wow, this all kind of came together, and, because of it, it obviously feels organic, and people are attracted to that, not only that narrative, but that feeling. That's just, you cannot fake that feeling.
Agreed, completely. And it's funny how often, I'm sure you've been asked in the past by people like, hey, I want to do this for a living. Do you have any advice? And like, obviously you can say, play as many shows as possible and make friends and network and see what happens and just be passionate about it. But really, like, so much of it is just right place at right time and right people. It's really hard to predict, and it's, I think, pretty special when it happens organically. And it's fun for me to like step back and consider all these different moments in time since we started playing music and how things have developed. It's pretty baffling. It's never not shocking to me, and never not incredibly humbling, but it's always, it's cool. It's super cool.
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting too, because the way that you guys have obviously cycled as a band, you've always struck me as you want to be a band and you want to be active on tour and you want to take those opportunities, but then you always come back to the roots that obviously existed before, you know, this, before La Dispute was obviously as serious as it is now. So yeah. I think because of that, it gives you the perspective to be able to be like, oh, well, like you could still be excited about it, as opposed to, well, here we are. Here's another album cycle, another 700 shows these next 2.5 years,
right.
You know?
Totally. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. That's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah. And so you yourself, when did you notice, like, I mean, it could be, you know, it can be an individual moment or it can be, you know, sort of a collective feeling. But, you know, when did you start to feel that what you guys were doing was resonating?
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
As far as like, oh, wow, whether it was like the, you know, your first tour where you had like five people in front of you singing along, or whether it was like a more grandiose moment of like, wow, this is weird that we're playing this show or whatever.
From the first time we ever played a show, we played at this little arts cooperative in our hometown that is no longer a thing, although it's trying to be a thing. They got kicked out by their landlord pretty recently. But we played, and it was a lot of friends, you know. It was this is our first show when most of you are still in high school. A lot of people showed up, and, you know, I don't know that we ever at that point in time thought we were going to ever play another show again. And we just had people come up and be like, you know, they actually enjoyed that. And it was actually like something going on. And from that moment, it's just been a series of those kind of moments where, like, every time we play a show, it's another small pleasant surprise where we're like, man, people gravitate towards this. I mean, it's never been something that we've played because of that. It's always, you know, we always, first and foremost, enjoyed creating something together, and that's never left. But every time you play a show, you're reminded that you don't exist in a bubble and that there are people who connect to what you do, whether it's on like a deeply personal, emotional level or purely on an aesthetic level, purely sonic, you know. So I don't know. It's every time I stop and think about any moment of time since we've been playing, it's that moment again. It's like, oh man, like,
yeah, this is weird.
It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy and humbling and really bizarre, but it's something that I'm never not incredibly thankful and grateful for.
Yeah. Along those same lines, you know, like you were saying, obviously people emotionally connecting with what you're doing, you know, I mean, referencing a song that obviously is like, you know, part of your, we'll live on after the band has died, like a song like King Park that people, you know, as you guys were crafting that song, because obviously being the singer, you're going to be the person that not only is going to be the most approachable, but,
sure,
but will obviously is the direct inspiration behind the lyrical content. Were you prepared at the sort of interactions that you were going to get? I mean, I'm sure you weren't prepared, but the, you know, just that concept of like, okay, I put this out here. This is a very, you know, emotionally loaded song, and people are going to respond to it in, you know, however they're going to respond to it. But then the unintentional feedback that you're going to get of people coming to you being like, either I'm looking for a solution or I'm looking for a shoulder to cry on. Like, you know, how's that had to like sit with you? Cause I know that's a weight that no one considers, because it's hard to consider.
No, not at all. Yeah. It completely catches you off guard. And it's when I think about how off guard I've am still caught by that every time I go on tour. I feel stupid because, like, of course, truly, you know, bare the contents of your soul to be incredibly cliche, or choose to approach a really dramatic and powerful story like the one that became King Park. You do invite that connection. And it's, yeah, like, it's never an intentional thing, and it's never something that you expect. I don't think it's ever something you get used to. I talked to Kyle from Pianos Become the Teeth at length about this because of the content of their last record and how personal that is to him and how connected that is to his family and his experience and the amount of people that have undergone a similar incidence and want to talk to him like he has a solution. I think the important thing is understanding that people aren't looking for a solution. People are interested in commonality, and people are appreciative that you've put it into the public forum, I guess, or articulated it for them when they couldn't. I still don't know what to say. Like I said earlier, like, we've always made music because we love to make music together, and everything else is kind of extra. But it's really inspiring and, again, humbling to see that as a positive force in a stranger's life, particularly when they've been going through something difficult and found solace in something that I've said, or a chord that's been played to accompany what I've said, or whatever. It's a really powerful thing, especially when I had and still have those artists for me. The music is so, has the capability to be so cathartic and therapeutic in a strange way. And I think it is mostly in that it creates this support structure.
Yeah. And I also find it really interesting too, because, you know, a lot of this is a lot of, when you're creating art, a lot of it is a one-way relationship. You know, you yourself are consuming said piece of art. And then at that point, you place so many things upon the person who is creating it. And so I'm sure, basically I'm sure a lot of people who are, you know, either fans or not fans of your band look at you and are like, wow, you're just a broken individual. Like, you're this, like, emotionally frazzled, you can barely keep it together person. When in actuality, more often than not, you're not. You know,
yeah, right.
And so those expectations, I'm sure it's weird when a person comes up to you and is expecting one thing out of you, and then, you know, you're busting jokes on them, and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah, totally. No, it's an interesting, I think it's oft discussed in regards to art in general, but it really provides a platform for discussions of all aspects of human life, be them good or bad, or tragic or joyous or whatever else. And everybody's comprised of all of those things. I do think it's interesting sometimes when people are like, I'm going through this. And I want to know how you got through everything that you got through, because clearly there's a degree of emotional scarring that goes into the music that we've made. But there's two things to consider, you know, it's like, well, A, no. I think it is, there's a certain level of poignancy in, you know, I'm not an emotional wreck constantly, but I am sometimes, you know, and it's an ongoing process. And I think that's always what I fall back on when I'm talking to people. It's like, you might never be okay. I might not be all okay now, but there's not one way or the other, you know. You're not just okay or really great. You know, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
As cliched as it is, the best way to describe it, in my opinion, it's like, you know, it's the journey, not the destination. It's like, if you're not,
totally.
If you're not involved in the process of whatever you are looking to get, you're not getting the experience. You're not getting anything meaningful from it. So it's the same.
Right, totally.
Yeah, it's the same interaction with art. It's like, you know, there's a million ways to get to that point. It's like, it's just about honestly expressing yourself. And yeah, like you said, that's the best advice that you can give to somebody.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that it's like, you know, everyone wants a solution. And if you're going through a problem that is especially difficult for you, and that feels, you know, crippling, and that makes you, you know, feel like not waking up in the morning,
sometimes the solution isn't an equal and opposite reaction. It's not like all of a sudden you're just great. It's sometimes it's, you know, deciding to, I don't know, you know, shovel the driveway.
Right.
Or sometimes it's, you know, making a cup of coffee, or sometimes it's not always like everything's better now. It's like, it's small victories all the time.
Right. Right. Steps
forward. Life, you know?
Yeah. Were you raised with any sort of like a religious perspective or anything from that nature?
Yeah, I was. I grew up in a pretty religious community. West Michigan is heavily populated by the Christian Reformed Protestant Church. Mm-hmm. So I grew up going to church. I grew up going to the Christian schools, and my parents are religious. Not like, you know, I say that and I always have to give the caveat that they're not, you know, crazy evangelical conservative Christians, which I think is always where people jump to. Like,
they're
very well reasoned. Yeah, they're very well reasoned and intellectual in their beliefs, and they're also very compassionate, very caring, and always have been. And that's had a profound impact on me, even if I don't align myself with their religious beliefs now as an adult. I value the way I was brought up, because, you know, this will be shocking for some people to hear, but it taught me tolerance, and it taught me acceptance, and it taught me to love everyone. And I think it's definitely had an impact on me. Even if I don't associate myself with religion now as an adult, I still am I'm happy that I grew up in a good, smart religious community rather than a crazy, indoctrinated, backwards, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just, you know, and obviously not knowing that about you and just hearing the way that you talk, like, you strike me as that, because I have a similar upbringing. I mean, I myself still to this day, like, have, you know, for lack of a better term, I consider myself Christian.
Sure.
More so on the spiritual side than the religious side. But hearing people that aren't, that have that immediate gut reaction of just like, oh, if you have any of that in your head, you're the worst. Like, and it's like, no, not at all. You can you can have these values that are instilled, like, that are inherently a very, very good thing. You don't have to be turned off from that. And it's like, yeah, you definitely feel, especially within the independent music community, you really feel a sort of either or. You're either with it. You're either with it or against it. And it's like, well, there's also a lot of gray area, right?
Right, exactly. And it's so funny to me, because it's like, it's the one thing that you can't be, you know? It's
right.
Like, it's the alternative culture preaches acceptance on all levels. It's like, I don't care if you're, you know, a woman or a man, or black, white, or gay, or straight, or whatever. But then it's like, if you're Christian, then like, whoa.
Get out. Yeah.
You know, and it's just so, I don't know, it's crazy to me, and it makes zero sense. And I guess that's the thing that is so shocking to me, is I get where it comes from. I get that, like,
right,
Christianity publicized is Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and like President George W. Bush and whatever else, and this like conservative ideology that is so contrary to the actual thought behind it and the actual belief structure when practiced well and well reasoned.
Yeah.
And it's like everyone picks the furthest extreme of religion and then encourages you not to do so with everything else. And that's what never made sense to me. It's like, why are we so like quick to be like, well, not every, it's the one thing where we accept the extreme backwards.
Yeah. No, it's very true. Yeah. That was the main reason I asked, is because just hearing your terminology and hearing your approach to things, I was like, oh, okay. Like I have a feeling there's something at the core of that, which is awesome. Something else that strikes me, interesting about your band as well. Because you guys, I mean, you guys have toured, obviously, and you guys have made yourself, you know, aware as far as like, you know, being out there, there's that weird feeling of like, okay, like at any point, La Dispute could break up and every single band member,
no one would know.
Well, yeah, for sure. No one would know. But then there's that feeling that, you know, each individual member would go on being creative in some capacity. And it's like, it's interesting to have that sort of like that kinetic energy where it's like, what's happening with La Dispute? Like, are they gone? Are they dead? What's happening? And like, cause it seems to me like that kind of has always existed without, you know, in the context of your band, where it's been like, if you're not immediately in front of everybody's face, they're just like, oh, they like, man, they must be gone now. Like, have you noticed that being an, you know, input on you guys?
Yeah, totally. It's funny that, I don't know. It's a weird thing where we've obviously not shied completely away from the public eye given the profession we've all chosen. But I think there is
a certain amount of distance we've always wanted to keep with, there's so little, there's so much transparency everywhere nowadays. It's nice to step back from that and to combat the whole like perceived celebrity when possible. But, going back to what you said about like us always doing something, I think that it's like an interesting statement about all of us individually, but then how this band has kind of altered our perspective over time and kind of like ingrained this need to be doing something in some capacity, even when we're not actually doing something in some capacity, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I always like that perspective, because you do, you can look at whatever, you can look at a million bands that exist within the context of independent music, and you can totally point, yeah. You can totally point to most of the members of any band and be like, if this were to go away tomorrow, they would be, screwed from like not only a short term, but like a long term perspective, where it's like, because their identity is completely their identity and their yeah. profession is completely tied up into this thing. They've got no quote unquote extracurricular activities. Like, and it's,
yeah, I think that's that partly that perception comes from always putting yourself in the public eye. And
yeah.
The more you choose to associate yourself in a greater community with one specific thing, the more people assume that about who you are and what you do. And this isn't, I know that we all love Last View and what it's been to us and what it will continue to be, hopefully, for the next while. But it's definitely not the be-all, end-all. It's definitely not the thing that we want to be our only legacy as individuals going forward. And, you have other things that you want to do and other ways in which you want to be creative and other things that are important to you that don't even involve other people.
Yeah.
Outside of your own specific niche and your own family and friends.
It's funny because you guys, amongst some of your peers as well, it totally reminds me of, there's this, that record label from here in California called Ebullition Records. They release Yaphet Kotto and a bunch of other great bands.
Uh-huh.
But the bands that all align themselves with that sort of Ebullition culture, you did feel like there was, not only each band member had their own kind of individual voice and sort of like we were saying extracurricular activity, but then there was that deliberateness of like, we're playing together for a reason. And this isn't because we're in a band. Like there's a reason behind this. And it's like, I think that to me, that's the trend that I want to see continue happening within independent music. Cause for a while it was definitely like, oh, we're playing in a band to play in a band. But now like if you feel like there's more of a tendency to be like, no, this kind of has to come out of us.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And that's, I think for us, that's a little bit product of environment. The way that we grew up and the way that we learned to be creative and learned to be in a band was being a part of a network of like-minded people and playing basements and being a part of like the DIY culture in the Midwest. And there is like a weird, overstated, but like a very prevalent desire to create and to exist within a culture that values more than what you're given on the surface from every other so-called claim to purpose and all the direction that we're pushed in our culture nowadays, technology and the almighty dollar and everything. I don't know. It's just like you learn it's almost it feels like a will to survive, a means to survive. And I think we still in a lot of ways feel that way when we make music together.
It's so hard to still harness that feeling when there's so much that comes in between that, from business to finances,
right.
And yeah, it's tough to keep that balance, which is awesome.
It's really hard. But it's not impossible. And I think it's far too easy to say it's really hard and then accept the easy route. But there is a way that you can do it. And even like when we first started to exist outside of that very specific like Midwest basement show DIY culture, there was a lot of backlash from people that we knew. But I think we still maintained control of what we did creatively and still do to this day. And I think that the more time passes, the more resources that bands have to really
keep everything close to their chest and work with friends and make something function that way without relinquishing control too much to someone who has a external concern for their own well-being.
Yeah, for sure. The last thing I want to hit on before I let you go was the, you know, because obviously as every band ebbs and flows, each member kind of, you know, goes through their own like sort of highs and lows as far as like, oh man, this is like the best part ever versus like, oh my gosh, like I hate doing this. I hate being in a band for whatever capacity. You know, what sort of aspect do you find yourself kind of hitting the lows, whether it's like tour, whether it's recording, like, you know, what sort of, what are the challenges that you notice kind of being themes throughout the time that you spent in the band?
It's an interesting time to be asked that question, given that we're in kind of a state of flux with everyone living in different places now, and then this like weird transitional phase from doing everything full time to having a home life. But that's really, I think that's where it's overplayed, I'm sure, to say it, but the difficult thing is always, I don't know, stress of the road and being apart mm-hmm. from the people you love and how that complicates a healthy home life. That's definitely, I mean, which is not to say we don't have a lot of fun on tour, but still, yeah, I think we all still feel like we're getting in the van and driving to Bloomington, Illinois to play a basement show every time we get on in the van to go on tour.
Right.
Because we're still five friends who have a lot of fun goofing off together in between playing shows and being serious for an hour every day. But that's the hard part. I mean, it's easy to write and to exist in that world and work towards a product, but then it's being in a different place every night and being away from the small comforts that the older you get, the more you value. So I think that's, I don't know, but there's nothing that I don't adore and cherish. There's nothing that I don't have a blast doing anymore, you know, and right. I hope that's never the case. Granted, I don't see myself doing this when I'm like Mick Jagger age.
No, yeah.
And I have no desire to, but for the time being, we're still young and we're still passionate about it and still making it work and still getting along, which is, right. I guess, a miracle because most bands probably don't.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
not most bands, but a lot of bands don't.
It's remarkable. It's very hard. It's funny, too, because when everybody's talking about the longevity of their band, they always reference the Rolling Stones. Always. Like, yeah. It's like nine times out of ten, you're just like, all right, who's the old rocker I can pull out of my head? Yeah, yeah, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, well, I can't say somebody who's playing, like, Kuwait and Casino, which is the bulk of the people that age. Like,
yeah, no, it's totally
or
true.
Or, like the Doobie Brothers. Like, I kind of love the Doobie Brothers, but it really, it's more impactful across the board if I reference, you know, somebody who plays a Super Bowl halftime show.
Right, right. No, for sure,
but
for sure.
That's totally true. That's really funny.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay attention to that because it's not the first time that I've made that reference.
I know. We should think of I'm trying to think of who within independent music, like, I mean, you know, you could reference, like, you know, Hot Water Music or something like that, or, Ian MacKay, where it's like, okay, he's done, you know, he's obviously done well for himself over time to create his niche of the world. So yeah, we'll think of a better one.
Yeah, I'll go preliminary, the Stooges. We'll go Stooges.
Okay, good.
That exists. That's proto subculture. Right?
Very true. Very true. Good point. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you hanging out, and I'm glad we could get heady on a lot of stuff because I know you're a heady guy, and you can handle these conversations.
This is a lot of fun. This is one of the most fun times I've had talking on the phone, let alone doing an interview. So thank you.
Oh wow. Most fun on the phone ever. I like
that. I don't really like talking on the phone, so this has been a good time. I haven't grown tired of the conversation. It was a very unconventional interview, which I appreciate because I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it gets pretty taxing talking about what my, like, festival necessities are. Like, where did we get our band name?
I love the list. That's why I'm always so hesitant to be like, you know, name a moment, but then it's like, yeah. But then I reference, I'm like, okay, I'm not asking them for their top five, you know, van
no,
picks.
No, and it's all in context too. Like, if it was right. this is great, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So there you go. There was Jordan. Great guy. Just, it was really interesting to hear him talk about acting and how much he enjoyed that. And I was like, oh, I get that. I get kind of why you do what you do on stage. It makes me happy when I hear those nuggets of interest that people had earlier in their lives that influence what they do now. So, great guy. Check out Lotta Speed's new record, Rooms of the House. Really, really good. Shout out to Tom Richfield, the editor. Always does a good job. Actually, not good. Amazing. I wish I could kiss his hand every day because he does such a good job. And I don't know if people in the UK do that, but here in America, we kiss people's hands. Actually, not really. We don't even do that. But regardless, I just want to express my undying love for him and the help that he gives to the show. Visit propertyofzach.com. Visit 100wordspodcast.com. And on the show next week is Joe Merrow from the early November. How about diversity? I mean, one week you're going to get a hardcore band. The next week you're going to get an artist. The next week you're going to get a dude who runs an independent business. Like, just, I just get excited about sharing this stuff with you. So until next week, be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.